Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson on this July, 7th, 2022. I am glad to be with you this morning. I was perusing my latest edition of Automotive News. Doesn't that sound exciting? You know, this is something everybody should have a subscription to. Then you wouldn't need me. Well, then again, maybe you shouldn't do that. I just wanted to let you know something that I did learn in this edition is that Russian cars have had to drop airbags and ABS because of sanctions. Yes, a Russian automaker is building its cars without airbags, anti-lock brakes, and other safety features because the parts it needs are being blocked by the international sanctions imposed over that country's war with Ukraine. So, if you were thinking about going out this weekend and buying an AutoVaz, that's the name of this company, AutoVaz. They've had to shut a lot of their plants, though. They can't get stuff to build vehicles. I don't feel sorry for them, though. You know, the citizens are the ones that suffer, right? Because if they run into somebody, they won't have airbags. Speaking of airbags, I'm so excited about what happened yesterday. So I've talked over the past couple of years about this truck project that I'm doing. So this is a car hauler. So you know what that is. It's, you know, you see these rollbacks going around all over the place, you know, from these wrecker companies. They come pick up your car. You know, the whole bed slides back and comes down to the ground so that they can either drive or pull the vehicle up onto the back of it, and then it comes and settles down where it's supposed to so that they can drive away with your repossessed car or your car that is not running anymore. Or if you're, in fact, buying a vehicle from Carvana or Carvana, however you say it, then that's how they deliver your car to you. Or they pick up your car if they're buying it from you. But nobody cares about them. They are in trouble and will continue to be until this crisis with shortages resolves itself. It's going to take some doing to get that to resolve itself. But anyway, I'm not worried about them. But anyway, this car project, truck project, I should say, it's a car hauler. It is a 2010 F450, that's a Ford, chassis that I stretched 7 feet. Why would I do that? So that I can haul something pretty big on it. So we wanted to be able to haul like Broncos, you know, just about any car. I don't think I can haul like a crew cab F-150, but I really don't care. I'll rarely be hauling anything like that. But we're going to use it in a really cool way. We're going to deliver cars to people's houses in it. If they want it, if they choose to have it delivered to their house, it's going to be a feature vehicle in our commercials. And it's also going to be used for, you know, picking up customers' vehicles if they can't get in for service or something like that. But it has, now, you know, who's going to get excited about a 2010 F-450, right? Not many people. What if it has a 1949 truck body on it? That's a little bit more interesting. Well, yesterday, the reason I'm so excited is they put the leather interior in it. And this is a blue truck with red leather. That doesn't sound real good. You know, I've never thought blue and red looked that good together, except on an American flag. But it actually does look really good. I think you'll be pleased. I'll be posting pictures on the My Car Guru website. I do have a website. I don't pay enough attention to it, and I apologize for that, and I'm going to do better. The website provider is a company called Ning, Ning.com. But you can go to mycarguru.org. I know that's a little different. It's not .com. It's .org for org. Normally, you see that with any type of organization, government. Well, government is .gov. So, like, I don't know, charities and things like that use org. The National Archives use org. I just thought it would give me more credibility, plus .com was not available. So, mycarguru.org, and you'll be able to see a lot of the stuff that we're doing as far as pictures and things. Or you can just become a friend on my Facebook page, Lenny Terry Lawson. Terry is my wife. It's not, well, her name is actually Tara, but her mom, I guess, decided that she needed to spell that with an I. Don't know why that happened, but she's Tara to me. But it is Lenny Terry Lawson. If you want to become a Facebook friend, and you'll see a lot of the stuff, projects, and things that we're doing. Or you can just go to Gateway Ford's Facebook page, and you can join there. But I did want to talk a little bit about pricing on vehicles. It's a problem right now trying to decide how much you should pay for something. Just about any dealership you roll into is going to have ridiculous. What would have been ridiculous 2 years ago is normal now. If you want to buy a car, get ready to pay out the nose. I mean, really, it's a combination of inflation and just market forces and shortages. I mean, okay, so you're a Ford dealer, and you've got, normally you'd have 150 Fords in stock, let's say. All of a sudden, you move along about 18 months, and you've got 8 Fords in stock. And you've only got 12 coming from the factory, and they're all sold orders. What are you going to price those other 8 at? You going to discount the whiz out of them? No, you're not. Now take off your consumer hat, put on your business person hat, and wouldn't you try to make as much as you could on those 8? Of course you would. I guess it comes to a point where it becomes ridiculous, and you just got to say, no, I'm not paying that. The way we do it at my dealership is different than probably 80%. Of the dealerships out there. About 20% of them sell vehicles for MSRP like I do. Now, there are certain exceptions to that, and I'm not embarrassed to say that. If I get a Ford Mustang GT500 in here, the going market price for those, I could sell it to another dealer, not a consumer, but a dealer who's going to sell it to somebody else for $25,000 over the window sticker. So basically, the window sticker means nothing. That's why they call it manufacturer's suggested retail price. That's really what that stands for. Did you know that? That's what MSRP stands for, suggested. It's not an order. It's not required. It's just suggested. And so that suggestion was ignored for the last, well, ever since I've been in the car business. We didn't sell cars from MSRP. Nobody would pay it. Most of our transactions are at or below the factory invoice, which is what we paid for the car, and then we get holdback and stuff like that from the manufacturer. Makes it a little bit profitable, not much. I mean, I remember when we started getting these Ford Fiestas in. Ford doesn't sell them anymore except in other countries. But the base model Ford Focus, the difference between invoice price and MSRP was about $350. Now, if you tell the average consumer that you're selling them a $15,000 car and you're only going to make $350, they'll think you're crazy. But, folks, that's the way it is. Now, when you go up into like F-150s, you know, higher price means higher profit. But still, the margins are small, 6-8%, even in MSRP. So what dealers are doing is they're charging more. The market is forcing up the overall prices. If you look at a 2007, average price on a 2007 vehicle, that wasn't that long ago. Just looking at the average price was $26,560. 2012 jumped a little bit. You know, that's 5 years? That's my math. $28,585 was the average price. 2017 went up a little bit more, $31,686. From 2017 to 2022, $44,744 is the average price. So basically, the average new vehicle now costs nearly what the average typical American makes in a year. That's sad. That's why a lot of people are financing for such long terms. The average transaction price, according to J.D. Power, was $45,502 for May of this year. But some people disagree with that. Cox Automotive and Moody's Analytics say that the cost of acquiring a new vehicle in May was $821, including factors such as financing cost. You know, you think about that. That's, according to their math, it's 41.3 weeks of the average U.S. median household income. What is that number? $70,284. That is the average median income. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are way above that. Well, probably fewer that are way above that. Well, except median, I think, means the middle, right? So there's an average, there's a mean average, and there's a median. Now, I don't remember what all that stuff means, but it seems like median took into account the actual number of people and just kind of hit the number in the middle. But that's not really fair, because you look at what most people make, I would think it would be significantly less than that. And then you got the big hitters, you know, the upper 1% that really skew everything. So I'm not exactly sure how they took that into account. But still, you think about that level of inflation and pricing, and it's crazy. And then you have the market forces that are in play. One of the ones that's causing people the most heartache, I guess, is no incentives out there. Now, I just sold a good friend a new Bronco. He ordered it 2 years ago. It came in while I was on vacation last week. It's been sitting at Bronco Mountain. That's the nickname for the place where they store Broncos that they can't finish because they don't have enough computer chips. So it's been sitting at Bronco Mountain since, I think it was January. So they almost had it finished. They had it finished enough to put the ECM or the PCM, which is a computer, and put it in, drive it over to Bronco Mountain, pull it back out, and just wait until they could get enough computer chips to finish it. You know, this guy's a good friend of mine, and he was patient. A lot of people aren't, though. Would you be? I don't think I would be. I don't think I'd be willing to wait. There's too many other nice vehicles out there. But the problem is, if you go to try to buy a Toyota 4Runner right now, you're going to have to wait. I don't know, really, what else competes with the Bronco? Jeep? They can't build enough of them either. You know, they're on hold. So people are just having to wait. I've got some F-250s, 350s, and 450s that folks have been waiting a year for. And the problem is they want these loaded-up vehicles. They want the Platinum, the King Ranch. And, you know, the more equipment that you get, the more computer chips it requires. So I guess if you want to get something from a, let's say you want to go to a Honda store and you want to buy a new Accord, then you sit down with the guy who orders the Accords for that dealership or manages their new car inventory and say, listen, this is what I want. What could I get here the quickest? I mean, if let's say I don't get a limited model. I don't even know if they have a limited model in the Accord lineup. But what if I get just a DX? Remember when they used to have DX and LX? And I don't know, remember, EX, I think, was the top. Yeah. And what if I get a DX? Were you going to be happy with a DX? I mean, you really want to roll your windows down manually? Of course, that's probably standard. Power windows and locks are probably standard now. But at least they're not like the Russians, right? Taking out airbags and ABS brakes and all that safety stuff. Of course, you could never get by with that in this country, because that's federal law. You can't break the federal law, can you? Well, maybe you can. Okay, we'll take our first break. Be back here in just a second. Okay, we're not breaking any laws here. I just want to make that perfectly clear. You know, sometimes I see a lot of legal violations going on in the auto industry, usually in advertising, but also in some dealership practices. I've talked extensively on this radio show, how to keep from getting ripped off when you've, you know, you're all excited, you finally decided to buy a car, you close the deal, and then you go into the finance office and you get taken advantage of. And that typically looks like paying too much for an extended warranty or a service contract, paying way too much for gap insurance, you know, buying some extra packages that really have no real value, like paint sealant and fabric protector, and some of these tire and wheel programs aren't, you know, worth that much. You got to read the fine print. You know, somebody says, well, we'll replace your tires if they wear out. Remember the Tires for Life program? I made the mistake of doing that one time. I thought it was a really good idea. It was not. I won't get into details on that in this show because that's a show-long nightmare to share with you. But, those products that they sell in finance are good. I mean, a service contract, something that will double or triple your warranty that's on your vehicle, that's a good thing. But not if you pay $5,000 for it. You just got to keep it in reason. Gap insurance, that's a good thing too. But, I mean, it only pays off, folks, if you wreck your vehicle and it's totaled or if somebody steals your vehicle and it goes bye-bye and you never see it again. Then gap insurance will step in and pay the difference between what you owe on your car and what the insurance company says they will pay for your car. Well, see, that's really not a big problem right now because used car values are so high. I think gap insurance is something I'm not sure you need. But a lot of that stuff, you're rolling the dice. Anytime you buy insurance, heck, when I buy life insurance, I'm rolling the dice, right? So you just got to think about things like that. It's easy to get taken advantage of. It's also easy when you hear advertising that makes really big claims. We'll pay you off your trade no matter how much you owe. What does that mean? What does that really mean? That means that they are going to pay off your trade, and then they're going to slap the difference between your ACV, your actual cash value, and what you owe on your car, and they're going to add it to the contract on the car you're buying right now. That's what they ought to say is, instead of we'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe, is you and I will pay off your trade no matter what you owe. But I don't have to pay for it. You do. Now, that's an advertising claim that sounds good. Oh, you mean they're going to pay off our trade, honey? You mean this $18,000 negative equity we have, it's just going to go away? They make it sound like it's going to go away. And then you don't read your contract, and you say, what's that $18,000 on the page one of that contract? We didn't see that at the dealership. Oh, Lord. It's just something you have to pay attention to. I wish I could be there with everybody, when they're working the deal. We could have hand signals and eye rolls. You could look at me and go, no, don't sign that. Wouldn't that be great to take somebody that actually knew what they're talking about? Why do I know? Well, because I've been doing this for 40 years. I've been a car dealer, I've seen everything. If I felt something was, kind of over the top as far as aggressiveness, I'd stopped it, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes you infect your dealership with that kind of stuff. You've got, 25 people on your sales staff, okay? And you lose a couple salespeople, and you find out this guy's available, and he comes and works for you, and he said, well, I used to work at this dealership and that dealership, and I was relatively successful and stuff. And then about 3 months later, you start hearing a customer complaint here and there. And, he told us it was going to be one thing and it was something else. And you hear this, and so bring the salesperson in and said, did you really tell these people this? Oh, no, I didn't tell them that. They're making that up. And then you have to dig in deeper and you find that, well, this guy's dishonest. So what do you do? Well, the dealership ends up eating his dishonesty, the mistakes that he made. And then, at least that's what I do. If somebody comes forward and says, I don't care if a salesperson been gone for 6 months. I mean, if it's something, it's my dealership, wasn't his. And who is the customer going to hold accountable? Moi. That's me in French. They're going to hold me accountable. And I'm good with that. I don't like it. But, I mean, that's what you do. Now, I'm telling you, you go to most dealerships and you complain about something that you discover 90 days after the sale, they're going to tell you to pack sand. That's a phrase I heard from a former sales manager. He used to work for me, and he was kind of dishonest once I found out about it. That's just the way it works. But that's true in any business. It's not just the car business. I mean, you might have some type of a retail store. They're selling quilts, for all I know. I mean, you could have a crook in a quilt store. It's possible. You know, there's plenty of them out there that try to take shortcuts, but you just have to pay attention. And that's the point I'm trying to get across is there are certain fundamental things that you need to do and you need to pay attention to. And one of them is when you leave the sales floor and you go into the finance office, that you read the documentation, you know what you're buying, and you use your common sense to evaluate, is that too much? Do we really need to pay $4,000 to protect our vehicle for an extra 36 months? Probably not. So put some thought into it. Okay, I'll take my last break. Be back here in just a minute. Kind of on my soapbox as far as finance. But there are other areas that you need to watch out. You know, one of the things, areas we talk a lot about is the service drive and what's said in the service drive. We can talk about that tomorrow. And I'll get into some ways you can protect yourself and what to look for. You know, if somebody is overselling, that happens in a service drive because you go to most dealerships, those service advisors, guess what? They're paid on commission. Some of them are paid a percentage of sales, which, you know, and that usually the percentage is pretty small, so it's not like they're going to make a windfall if you decide you need a front-end alignment. But then they have to also be aware of their customer satisfaction scores. And, you know, we really penalize our service advisors if they get bad scores. Matter of fact, we'll penalize them so much they won't work here anymore if that's the case. But, you know, a good thing about my dealership right now is that, and for really for the last 4 or 5 years, we've had basically zero turnover. And I'm really pleased with that. You know, we still make mistakes. Any dealership, any business is going to make mistakes occasionally. But you know what the true test is? It's not whether or not you're going to make mistakes because you're going to. You try your best to eliminate those. It's what you do when you make one. I mean, how do you stand up to it? And there's too many businesses, car dealers, lots of different businesses. They just don't work hard enough to satisfy the customer when they do complain. And it's just inadequate. It's almost like they don't care. But that's not the case here at Gateway. So anyway, we'll be back with you tomorrow morning to talk about some of this stuff as far as service and how to protect your wallet when you go into a service department. and it's not just car dealer service departments. It's aftermarket. It's, you know, independents, that kind of stuff too. They can rip you off just as much as anybody else can. Most of them won't. Most car dealers won't. But it's just that occasional thing that you got to watch out for. Okay, well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.